Grosso from Vancouver to win it for Canada! Canada came! Canada conquered! Canada gold!
Buchanan with the cross in towards Alphonso Davies! Canada's history-making moment delivered by their biggest superstar! A goal the country has been dreaming about for decades! Finally arrives!
You're listening to the Northern Football Podcast with Peter Galindo, Alexander Gonge-Rujic, and your host, Ben Steiner.
Welcome into episode 132 of the Northern Football Podcast. It's the post-match episode of Canada's win against Ireland. It didn't start off so well, but Canada pulling out a 2-1 win against Ireland, ending Ireland's hopes of advancing as well. And welcoming back into the podcast, Peter Galindo, back from his role as performance analyst with the Canadian men's national team at their Gold Cup efforts, as well as Alex Gonge-Rujic as usual. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on all platforms and follow on social at Northern Football. Peter, not quite on Threads yet, but it does seem like Threads is somewhat dying out already. But Peter, Alex, welcome back into the show, especially you, Peter.
Yes, thank you. Missed you, boys. It's been a while, I know, and that's partially, well, I don't want to say it's my fault because I had other things to do, clearly. And just my luck, I ended up getting sick over the weekend in July in the summer of all times. So maybe it's my body's way of telling me, yeah, you know what, you're relaxing a little too much. We need to put a little bit more stress into your life again. So, but it's good to be back, especially considering Canada's won now, and they are looking decent here to get to the knockout stages. And it was definitely an interesting game. A lot of questions ahead for this Australia game as well, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But very much a stress-inducing morning if you're a Canadian fan, that's for sure.
Yeah, doing well, despite the early wake-up. I did the wake-up, by the way. I didn't do the foolish thing and stayed up like I did the first night for Australia and Ireland and whatnot. We slept good, got a good almost 6 hours in before the Canada-Ireland game. So it was actually quite manageable to watch, which I don't know, maybe I would have liked being sleepier for that first half because it wasn't the greatest, but it helped certainly when the second half came around and Canada woke up. I was already well awake. And yeah, it's been interesting to manage kind of this World Cup. It's nice again to just turn on the telly every night and just have footy on. And the only problem is just not getting sucked in. And you know, all of a sudden it's 3 a.m. and you're stuck in the weeds watching a Haiti-England game or something like that. But that's kind of the beauty of a World Cup.
The thing I found funny this morning was Canada Soccer after the match tweeting that the match was worth waking up for. And I kind of wanted to quote tweet it and say, like, maybe around 5:50 was worth waking up for. Not totally 5 o'clock, because that first half you could certainly miss. Canada did not play well in that first half. And of course, Canada did come out 2-1 winners, an own goal via Julia Grosso cross and a brilliant finish from Adriana Leon proved the decisive goals for Canada to get the 2-1 victory against Ireland. They conceded quickly, though, the fastest goal of the World Cup so far before they came behind. And that one from Katie McCabe was absolutely exceptional.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's one of the only times I think you would hate to see an Olympico scored, right? Because it was all over Twitter, and rightly so. It was a tremendous goal. Now, did Caelan Sheridan cheat a little bit? And considering it was an in-swinging corner, the wrong move? Yeah, but still a tremendous goal. And she meant it, too, Katie McCabe. Like, you could see it based on her follow-through, based on where her eyes were looking. She absolutely meant to do that. And it's one of a few examples as to how Ireland is so threatening off of set pieces. It's specifically those in-swinging deliveries. And even after that goal was scored, she caused a few problems with some of her corners in or some of the indirect free kicks, things like that. And it was a lovely way to open the score and to get Ireland's first goal in a Women's World Cup as well. And credit to them, they really did play well in the first half, probably tired out a little bit in the second half and fell victim to some sly play from Canada's veterans, but it's certainly a emphatic way to get your nation's first goal at a Women's World Cup, that's for sure.
It was just the execution. I mean Caelan Sheridan probably would want that one back, just she didn't have that much pressure on her in the box. You know, sometimes we see that where you get the crowd, the keeper, and it kind of makes it tough for you to reach out. But it was just also, that's how good the shot was. It just kind of caught everyone by surprise, and almost there was no one in the six. You kind of get a little comfortable, and then, you know, Katie McCabe, I mean, really, she felt like she was probably the best player on the pitch, green or red, and just in terms of the performance that she was putting it out there at four different positions. Started out at left wing back, then kind of as the game went on, she finished at left mid, right mid, and even a bit of striker, it felt like, with the how much ground she was covering. And I mean, again, credit to Ireland. It was something we mentioned heading in. This was the test for Canada, I think, really, out of this group of the big three, just because Nigeria is a very tough, very talented team. We know that. But as we saw, Canada really pushed them. And I mean, really, other than the penalty miss, it was something where that was Canada's game to kind of lose. And we'll see with Austria. Austria is going to be a good test. And of course, they could still knock Canada out, right? They're far in the clear. But just for me, it was always this Irish test, because Canada struggles against these low blocks. And Ireland kind of, you know, has something about them that none of the other teams have. And I think they showed it, really. That first half was so dominant from Ireland. And I really think it's almost impressive that Canada came back from that, because it really felt done and dusted. And it was like, oh, there's no way to come back from that. So just the fact they were able to snatch out this victory the way they did after the start that Ireland had was good for Canada, and sets them up nicely heading in that last game, no matter what happens with Australia and Nigeria, of course.
Certainly a slow start from the Canadians, but getting a goal off the Julio Grosso cross right before halftime, really turning the tides in this match. It was only the second time Canada has won a World Cup match without keeping a clean sheet. And Christine Sinclair's World Cup starting streak ended at 22 matches. She did come on. She did make quite the impact in the second half, as Bev Priestman took a lot of swings with her substitutes, but they pretty much all paid off. But we'll get into your questions now, and a question from WSoccer.ca at WSoccer.ca. Your takeaways and what went wrong in that first half?
Look, it's very simplistic to say this, but that early goal changed the entire complexion of the game, really. And I know it. You might say, well, yeah, obviously, but here's the thing. You plan and plan and plan leading into a game in terms of, this is how we want to orchestrate our attacks. This is how we're going to set up defensively. This is where we need to be positioned in this situation. This is where we should be rolling out here. You plan all these little details. And then after 3.5 minutes, you concede a goal off of an Olympico and it all goes out the window. And that's exactly what happened, I think, in terms of, you saw the players, I think, in a lot of ways, tense up a little bit. And that's going to happen, because when you realize, oh shit, we're down 1-0 against one of the best defensive teams at this tournament, and there's no way through, they are clogging up the central channels, the wide areas are also super tight right now, and we have to try and find a way to get this ball in behind their defense. So they're trying to hit early long balls. It wasn't coming off. They were, what, 29% off of their long balls in the first half. Their crosses were 1 for 11. I think if you include the Grosso cross, it was 2 for 11, but really you can't chalk that down as an accurate cross. So you look at all of those and you just realize, like, yeah, it was probably a symptom of conceding the first goal. But if you dive more into it a little bit, I do also think that a lot of players were a bit wary of conceding the counterattacks, because you saw how that double chance for Ireland fell right before the corner that led to the goal. And it was that space in behind the fullbacks, which Nigeria did target decently well in that first game. They just didn't quite have the execution at the end of it. And you could see that Canada's wide forwards, the fullbacks, and at times Julia Grosso, because she was kind of responsible for helping Ashley Lawrence cover that side, they were a little bit tentative to push forward a little bit too much, because they didn't want to concede that space in behind, especially to Katie McCabe, who, as we know, is a massive threat on the dribble. So I think it was both of those things kind of wrapped up into one. And then as the game goes on, you're getting frustrated and the stress starts to build. And that's why that goal couldn't have come at a better time. As fortuitous as it was, as out of nowhere as it was, and maybe we could even go as far as saying undeserving as it was, you could really see that it calmed everybody down, even in the final minutes before halftime. And then immediately in the second half, you could just see that there was a different kind of intensity to their play. They were winning second balls again. Obviously, the movement off the ball was tremendous, and we're going to get into that, I'm sure, mainly from Sophie Schmidt, Christine Sinclair, and others. But that was really quite the turnaround to see, and it really did stem from that equalizing goal for obvious reasons.
Well, I mean, as well, it just feels like, though, with Canada, this has kind of been a bit of a worrying theme at the same time, because it also feels like, I don't know what it is about first halves. They almost need like a shock. They need a jolt to the system to kind of find their legs. And I think, you know, you would have thought this goal would have provided it, but it was kind of like you also knew what the task was. You knew that if you know, Ireland, no matter what, was going to play the same way. If anything, the fact that Ireland got the early goal kind of confirmed, okay, we're really going to sit back and dare Canada to break us down. So, I mean, that was my big surprise from the first half, is just how disjointed they look, really. Because, I mean, even beyond tactics in terms of just the fullbacks, even the back three, they weren't really creating much in terms of back three. The midfielders were kind of fading out in between lines. But even then, there's so much where Canada didn't even allow themselves to grow into the game. So it's like, for example, those first 30 minutes, 40 minutes, how many times did we see a sequence where it's like either Buchanan gets the ball and, you know, she passed to Gilles passed back to Buchanan, and, you know, instead of taking your time and waiting for Ireland to draw out and press, Buchanan would just hit it long and then they'd lose the ball. And then, you know, you'd have another sequence you saw a lot was similar, like Buchanan up to Riviere, back to Buchanan, back to Sheridan, and maybe, you know, Sheridan steps on the ball and waits for Ireland to step up. No, Sheridan would boot it immediately up. Yeah. And there's just a lot of hopeful long balls where they didn't really, they're also just playing in Ireland's game plan for 40 minutes. It's kind of almost like they were, you know, it was just, yeah, I don't know. I just found that really surprising, because it's like, you know, you're playing a low block. How do you beat a low block? You have to draw it out. You have to play. You have to be patient in the buildup. And there's just none of that patience. Not kind of one even beyond any of the tactical setups. Because there's a few times where it's almost like you saw things coming into shape. You saw kind of Quinn tucking into that six, Grosso and Fleming stretching his eights. You know, the fullbacks are starting to spread out and you're like, okay, there's something cooking. Like there's something what you want to see was there. And then the long ball would hit you and then they'd lose the ball and they'd kind of instantly be in their reactionary, like in a defensive transition phase. So I felt that was a big surprise, because it's like when you're playing a team that's on the counter, you want to limit those defensive transitions. And every time they had a long ball, they created one, because they weren't winning any of the long balls either. At least if a few of them were sticking, like, okay, you understand the process, but they completed like 33% of their long balls in the first half. I think that number is even a bit generous to them, like, from what I remember. Might have been as low as
something, but either way, it was really, really low.
Yeah, so I think that was a big surprise, is that they were just so like off in that regard. It was like nerves, and I was surprised too, because there were like three moments where I thought they were going to turn it around. It was after the goal, they quickly huddled, and I was like, okay, that's fair. Like, you allow the goal, you huddle, you regroup. You thought maybe like, okay, guys, let's calm down. It's fourth minute of a game. What happened? It is what it is. But then they were, you know, really nervous after that. Then Kaylin Sheridan had her kind of tactical injury, and you thought, okay, that this point, the first huddle is just them. They go to the bench, maybe Priestman gives some instructions. They kind of cool down after that. But then no, that was, you know, that didn't happen. I think there's a third injury. It wasn't Sheridan the third time. It was one of the outfield players, and the same thing. They kind of went to the bench, tried to regroup, and it just didn't work. And for whatever reason, yeah, I was a bit surprised. It was like the subs are really what triggered it. And that's a bit of a worrying theme. So the last thing I'll say to end off this monologue is, I was diving into this for the slow starts. I'm like, surely it's not just me feeling like it's been a few of these dating back to last year's, you know, CONCACAF championship. So Australia onwards in the friendlies, Canada scored 19 goals. Six of them have been in the first half. And to add to that, only three of those six have been in the first 30 minutes. For whatever reason, Canada just doesn't get that much going in the first 30 minutes of games, especially offensively. And unfortunately, this game was another example of that.
There were a lot of struggles from Canada as well in this one in the first half. And I think the ones that really stood out to me, like you suggested, was their default to playing long balls. You'd start to see something come together, especially in sort of after the goal in the second part of the first half, and then it would just revert back to a hopeful long ball or a hopeful pass trying to play through lines, but there's the defender right there and it was just absolutely minimal chance of actually breaking the line with the pass. And that was happening with some of the best players, including Jesse Fleming, who returned to the lineup.
Well, yeah, and back to Alex's point regarding the long balls, and he did point it out there, but one of the things that you can do when you're facing even just a med press at times, because this is what Ireland mostly did throughout the entire game, there were occasions where they did press a little higher once they realized, like, oh, Canada's just going to hit it long. We might as well pressure them into doing that, and then they're going to hit it long. What you have to do is literally just suck them in, right? And that's what, for example, Montreal did a really good job of doing under Wilfred Nancy, was attracting that initial line of engagement, playing in behind them out wide, and then boom, you have tons of space in behind to exploit them. And there just weren't many opportunities where Canada did that. They did this at times against Nigeria, and it actually led to some of their best sequences of the game, really. There was that one from, an Ashley Lawrence cross to Jordan Heidema right before the half hour mark, where it was literally from back to front. They were able to lure in Nigeria's press, played through the lines, and got a chance off of that. And they weren't really doing that against Ireland. And then you saw the difference it made once they started to, first of all, play a bit more incisively in the second half, but then second to that, they weren't so afraid of facing that Irish pressure as much. And it led to easily their best stints of the game by far. So all those things put together, it kind of makes you wonder, well, why can't they just do that from the start? And when I see that, to me, I think it's a mental thing in that it doesn't matter who starts, because we saw that Christine Sinclair started against Nigeria. Yes, she was rusty at times, but I think also some of her movement was really, really crucial towards unlocking some space as well. And you really can't put a statistical value on that a lot of the time. But then you see her come off the bench and Sophie Schmidt come off the bench, and maybe at the cost of a little bit of youth. And then you realize, well, look, that experience clearly comes in handy here because they were calmer. They knew where to pick their spots, and you saw the difference it made. Right. And that's what I think is going to be just so frustrating for Priestman going into the Australia game, and what's going to be a massive game still, because they do likely have to get something from that match in order to advance, if not win the group. It's that we can't keep having these slow starts. We can't keep relying on second half substitutions to bail us out. Eventually, these starting lineups have to start putting something together to take the pressure off of this defense, because credit to the defense as well. Yes, they conceded 1.3 XG. The vast majority of that was off the double chance in the third minute from Ireland. You take that out of it, and they still conceded, I think, around 0.5, 0.6, similar to that Nigeria match. So if you're still getting solid defensive performances, you know you can rely on the team to, at the very least, keep it close. Now it's the same old story in that you have to do better in the first half. You have to start taking some risks. You got to have to match that energy that we see from some of these teams, especially some of the contenders we've seen in that first half.
Yeah, teams are going to start pushing Canada now because the slow starts, again, like I mentioned, this has been an issue going back to last September in terms of the slow starts offensively. And even again, in terms of the buildup, Canada's not been very press resistant for a while now. I think really, again, it started for me when that US final in the CONCACAF championships and the US pressed them off the park. And I think if you're an opponent looking at all of these games since, you're kind of like, okay, if we go out in the first 45 minutes and just, you know, completely make the game chaotic, press, force Canada into this, they'll come in the second half. Yeah, but if you make it 1-2-3-0 by the first half, especially these top teams, it's game over. That's just the nature of the game. So that's absolutely something that Canada is going to need to figure out, is how can they start better? How can they get more energy? How can they, yeah, just be more press resistant? Because it's, yeah, I mean, again, I do feel it continues to be the setup, because again, Canada looks best when they build out in the three, but there's so many times in their buildup where they almost rush, and like the player who's supposed to drop into the three, which again against Nigeria was kind of Riviere and Quinn, and then this game was more Quinn. Before like Quinn even gets back in the back three, they're rushing their buildup play and kind of going through. I think if you're another team watching that, but okay, let's press Canada, let's disrupt their possession patterns, because you do that and it kind of gets chaotic. And for whatever reason, it's maybe the halftime break, maybe it's just subs with fresh ideas, or subs who kind of got to see what was going on. But then they kind of come in and bring that calming presence where, look, that can work against a team like Ireland. But if you're going down 1-2-0 against some of the top teams in this tournament, good luck getting anything out of that. It's just something where that's, you know, you get a lead at this level, it's going to be hard. And that's something I'm watching for Canada, because yeah, you ultimately have to get the setup right from once. And it's always like credit to Priestman that she always has a read on the team and on the group, that she's able to always make those right subs. But at a certain point, the slow starts are going to hurt you once you face top opposition.
And it's not like they don't have technical players to be able to lure that press in and play out of the back either. You've got players playing in the top leagues in the world and for some of the biggest clubs in the world, and who are very, very polished on the ball. Just look at the entire back four today. Look at Quinn. Look at Julia Grosso. Everyone on that team should be capable of doing it, and yet for some reason, they just don't do it for some strange reason. And it's definitely not down to, I would think anyways, just a lack of instruction, because very clearly they have the huddle software set up on the touchline to be able to see the plays as it happens from a tactical viewpoint. So they're able to, like, even just the coaches, forget the performance analysts, forget the eye in the sky. They're able to see what's happening, and they can go back and watch certain sequences and go, okay, well, this wasn't quite right here. This wasn't right here. So then when they have those injury timeouts, quote unquote, they can relay that information to the players and say, all right, here's what we need to do. So I don't know whether they're just not grasping it. I don't know whether that's really the confusing part for me, because the tools are there to be able to give Canada the best possible resources to be able to say, all right, here's what we're doing well. Here's what we're not doing well. Let's make these changes, apply them, and hopefully something happens. And it's just not working. So you maybe have to start wondering, well, are the players capable of either taking that feedback or taking that instruction, or are they just not listening? It has to be one of those two to me.
Well, that's it. That's the last point. I mean, to hop in on that is just, again, yeah, the players. I think, for example, like Kadisha Buchanan, I mean, of course, she was coming off illness, so that's understandable. But again, she was even uncharacteristic. Like, she's usually so composed against the press. Like, how many times have you seen her open up her hips, hit that little Cruyff turn and kind of catch a press out and then break a line? And even someone like Ashley Lawrence, this one surprised me because she's so clean with the ball, right? 31 out of 42 passes, 74% for someone like Ashley Lawrence. That just feels, you know, that feels wrong for someone of her caliber. That was kind of the big one that stands out. Even Vanessa Gilles, 82% passing as a center back who had 62 passes, the fact she missed 12 passes. There was just too many examples of that. Jade Revere completing 73% of the passes. So it is a good point, because Canada's, it'd be one thing if Canada didn't have the technicians at the back, like, all right, just go along. But Jade Revere is very technical. Lawrence, you know, Buchanan, Gilles, maybe less so, but she plays for Lyon. She's gotten a lot of practice in terms of, you know, playing low blocks and playing against presses. Grosso, Quinn, that's absolutely a great point on that regard.
And your thoughts on the trio of Quinn, Grosso, and Fleming? I thought they were decent, but they could have been a lot better. It's been 19 games that Canada's played without the three of them on the pitch, at least to start, and they did look a little unsettled to start the game, and that contributed to the poor first half Canada had, and it was the subs in that area of the pitch with Grosso leaving the match for Sinclair that really changed the game for Canada, as well as Sophie Schmidt coming into that mix. But I think there's still some positives you can take out of their performances in terms of players that you want to move forward with, because, of course, you can't be subbing on 40-year-old Christine Sinclair and Sophie Schmidt for the foreseeable future.
For sure. Individually, I think each of them was fine in the first half, but as a trio, like, I think it was a symptom of how Canada was playing, though, because they were just bypassing the entire midfield at times, and it made absolutely no sense to me, because you've got these three brilliant technicians in the middle who can pick apart this defense, and you're just trying to hit it long to the wide forward or hit it long to an isolated Evelyn Vien, and you're just giving up possession and putting even more pressure on yourself as well as that midfield, because the midfield is also responsible for stepping up, stepping back, closing the gaps, rolling out here, rolling out there, making sure that everything is tight and compact and nothing can get through. And you're making their jobs so much more difficult. The fact that they haven't had 19 games in a row together to play certainly contributes to that, because probably part of it's a lack of familiarity. And sure, you train together, but it's much different getting those reps in an actual game, let alone in the World Cup, than it is to get that in training. So I think that's part of it. But I think also the fact that they were playing the way that they were playing from pretty much minute 3 to minute 44, basically, whenever the own goal was scored, certainly contributed to that. Because as a trio, on paper, it makes complete sense. I know Alex has talked about this at length. It's the ideal trio Canada should play with, especially when they want to dominate games and create a lot of chances. But tonight, or I guess this morning for us, it didn't come off, and that's likely why it didn't come off.
I'm going to sound like a broken record with all I've said of this tournament, but it's just like Julie Grosso shouldn't be playing in the double pivot. I think for me, it's as simple as that. I think for me, the problem isn't so much the three, because that's the right three. That's Canada's best trio, but it's just deployment. Because again, like in this double pivot, there many instances where Julia Grosso's dropping below Queen in the buildup. And that just shouldn't be happening because Grosso, I mean, you can see it with the eye test. You can see it with her best performances in a Canada shirt. Think last year's CONCACAF Championships. Why did it work? She scored 3 goals. She was in the final third, being influential. What does she do well at Juventus? She makes the final pass, the final ball of the assists, the key passes, the chance creation. Even like her FB ref chart, look, it's all green in terms of chance creation, final action. It's all green in terms of passing. She's not, you know, she's not suited for the double pivot. I think that's kind of been a huge issue because it just takes her out of the game. And I think that's kind of something where you've felt over the first two or these two games that, yeah, Fleming was missed in the first game and maybe wasn't up to full speed in the second game. But she was playing in that 10 role today. She got into opportunity. She had chances. Grosso just hasn't been anywhere near the spaces on the field she should be. And that, for me, it feels like deployment because, again, you see it in the buildup. It's Quinn and Grosso beside each other. It's Grosso dropping so deep to get on the ball. And that, I don't know. I feel like that's just, again, you're continuing to waste what Grosso can do. So it's kind of like I said, we were chatting about it on One Soccer, but I was like, if you're going to continue to play the double pivot, it should be Schmidt and Quinn because Schmidt, she plays that sort of double pivot number 6 role for Houston. She's used to kind of dropping deep and influenced getting on the ball in those areas. Grosso's, again, she's capable in the pivot. That's, don't get me wrong, but it's just, it feels wasted. And I feel like you look between Fleming and Grosso. Fleming's kind of been the default de facto 10 in that situation. Jesse Fleming played a bunch in the pivot last year for Chelsea because they experimented with that midfield and went to a 4-2-3-1. Fleming actually played in the pivot a bunch, and Grosso would always play as an advanced 8 for Juventus. So if anything, if Priestman wants to stick with that double 8, you play Fleming deeper, but you don't want that because Fleming's so good on the ball. So for me, I think the big issue continues just to be, I know it's a bit of a risk, and I think one thing I've kind of seen is, you know, I think if you're Priestman, you kind of like the double pivot because it's safe. It's kind of works, helps you defensively. Canada won the gold medal with the double pivot. You know, you're so used to Desiree Scott and Quinn in a double pivot, you're not giving up anything. But if Canada wants to start taking risks and getting goals, again, Grosso and Fleming both have to be higher up the pitch. And I think it just continues to hurt Grosso that she's kind of stuck deploying a little deeper. And if that continues to be the case, you'd almost be better having Grosso come off the bench and have Schmidt be in a double pivot versus Grosso.
Even if you start Schmidt, you approach the question of Canada just doesn't start games well. And so whoever you have in that midfield likely isn't playing minute 0 to minute 44 very well, just because that's not what Canada does. And so you make that sub and then suddenly Grosso comes on and she has an absolute masterclass. Or it's Schmidt that comes on for Grosso. Like, there's always going to be that sort of substitute that's always so much better because that's just how Canada is playing these days. It doesn't really matter who you start. They're going to start slow. And that leads into our next question as well. Evelyn Vienne gets a start as well today, another start, her first World Cup start, and she completely fades out of the action. She was pretty well invisible for the first half.
Yeah, and a symptom of how they were playing, really, because when you look at how she influenced the game against Nigeria, it was very much the exact same way that Canada turned things around in the second half today. In that they were playing fluid, quick, incisive, keeping the ball on the ground, dynamic movement off the ball, players opening up space for other players to make runs. And that's exactly how she thrives. She's amazing at getting into position in the box every single time. Like, it's uncanny how often she finds herself latching onto these quality chances in a game. And so when you're just hitting hopeful long ball after hopeful long ball after hopeful long ball up to her, yeah, of course it's going to lead to her only having 7 touches in the first half, which is just ridiculous. And that makes, again, the opposition's job so much easier, especially when you're a single striker playing against a back three. It's already difficult enough. When you are then just bypassing certain players just to get the ball forward, it makes no sense. You know, I was thinking to myself in the first half, well, was starting Vienne in this game the right move, given what Ireland presented to Canada, and as well as the fact that you knew you were probably going to have to play a little bit more patiently? And I thought, well, yeah, they're just not playing in the way that they should have been playing. And we saw in the second half, like, if Vienne was out there for the second half, guarantee she probably gets a goal. Because the quality chances that were falling to Heidema, Sinclair, Leon, et cetera, I'm sure VM would have put one of those away instead of firing it right at the goalkeeper for sure. So I don't really blame her at all for this one. In other games, you can maybe say, yeah, she just wasn't sharp enough. Certain things on her end just probably weren't up to standard. But today, I think you have to hold your hands up and just say, yeah, like she wasn't put in a position to succeed.
Peter, which model you have had 7 touches for VM? It's my question.
I think it was SofaScore.
Okay, interesting. FUTMOB has her for 11, and that was what I was going off of. And even that for a striker.
But even still.
Look, if your striker's getting 11 touches, that's always the team. That's for me. I don't know. That's you can't really blame a striker for getting 11 touches. And yeah, it just opens up questions in terms of just like, you know, what do they kind of want from her in that regard? Like, you know what Vian does. She, you know, she stretches lines, she pushes in behind. It was kind of like, well, then why not you trying to feed her the sort of service she thrives off of? But again, we talked about it with Hoytema last episode. It's kind of Canada has a bit of a number nine conundrum in the sense that they just kind of don't want to play either of the way their nines play. Because if you want Hoytema up top, it's like you mentioned, it's give her something to chase in the channels. Go give her some crosses to get the on the end of. And then with Vian, it's like, okay, she's going to stretch those lines, either get her something or take advantage of the space she creates. And for whatever reason, they just didn't take advantage of either of those in the first two games. And you just, yeah, you feel bad for Vian. Because again, anytime you're a striker, you get 11 touches. You're kind of like, what do I do? And then she kind of gets sacrificed. And it was one of those where, yeah, no matter who they put up front in that second half was going to do better. And it was one of those where I get why Priestman made a sub. It was one of those where if everyone plays bad, you just got to, you know, close your eyes and sacrifice someone. And it just feels unfair that it was Vian. And yeah, and I mean, now there's questions to ask about the deployment. And another thing that we've started to kind of see is, can Hoytema and Vian also play together? Because we've seen it a few times, and it's kind of been a bit, you know, chop and change. We've seen that combo of Vian up front and Hoytema on the wing, and they just don't really seem to gel. And this is kind of another one as well. You kind of have to throw Adriana Leon in that mix, because between those three, those are three very shoot-first players, and it kind of feels like when all three are on the field together, it's very... You know the ball's falling to one of them and it's going for a shot. And I think it was a lot of Leon, Hoytema. I think the one that was most egregious was, if you remember, Hoytema had that left-footed chance in the first half. Vian made a phenomenal run in behind, and she was onside. Touch probably gets it on target. And then Hoytema went for the left-footed shot. You don't want to blame Hoytema. She's a number nine. She scores goals. She sees the ball at the edge of the box. You shoot it. But it's like, to be fair, if you have a bit more of a natural creative winger there, if Rose or Prince, if they're healthy, or Lacasse, maybe she plays that ball into to Vian. So you kind of feel for Vian that she also did make some runs like that and just didn't get the service, because Canada's front three just didn't really gel in that first half between Leon, Hoytema, and her.
And while there were the subs, Dan Clark at DanClark999 asks, do you think having Sinclair and Schmidt come on as super subs is the best way to deploy them going forward in the tournament, or did it just work for this match? With the way they played, they looked like they could start and make an impact, but we saw that and there was not much impact, especially from Sinclair in that opening match. So it's probably as a super sub, but that means that you're getting likely subpar performances from the starting lineup if you continue with what we saw today.
Not necessarily, I guess, because you could just have them come on in any situation being like, hey, go out there and help us close out the game, or go out there and help us create something. Like, you can rely on them to do a variety of things, even just to have that calm veteran leadership for whatever situation, right?
And the players who start could also play better. Like, you're not going to performance from those selection of players all the time.
Yeah, fair enough. I think having Sinclair come on as a super sub is the best way to deploy her for sure. That being said, I would not be shocked if she started against Australia. Schmidt, I feel she's still good enough to start, but it's just a question of how do you want to deploy her in certain games, right? If you're going to play with a double pivot, then sure, she could, I guess, do a job. If you want to play her as part of, you know, a dual eight system, yeah, she can do that as well. I would say for right now, if you were to pick one over the other in terms of who would have the better impact starting, I would probably say it's Schmidt personally, because I think she can still offer you, first of all, a bit more in the way of stamina, a bit more in the way on the ball than I think Sinclair can. That first game, her touches were so sloppy, tons of turnovers. Part of that's probably the fact that she hadn't played in a while, or played in matches of that magnitude in a while. So it's going to take some time to get that back. But you saw Schmidt come on in both games and you're like, okay, yeah, she's still very much on it. The fact she's retiring is kind of nuts because she's still more than good enough to be a starter on the team. But it's a good option to have. That's for sure. Especially when you're a team that can't seem to start games very well.
Yeah. I mean, I think of the two, it's Schmidt's the one who would start just because again, with Sinclair, it's less like, okay, good performance or not. It's just more the fit. Cause I think again, at this stage, at least personally, I see her as a midfielder. That's what she plays at club. That's kind of her, you know, kind of suits her skills. She's kind of like a late box arriving number eight. That kind of role is best filled by Jessie Fleming. So you're starting Sinclair over Fleming? No. And then it's something like up front, she rarely plays nine anymore. That's why I was surprised when she kind of got thrown up there in the second half. She never plays that position these days for the Thorns, even rarely for Canada. And it kind of worked in an emergency pinch, right? You just need a different look up front, different thing. And I'm like, for the most part, you're likely trying to get something out of Hoytema or Vien up front. So I said, just use her as a super sub and kind of whatever the game dictates. If you need a bit more up front, Sinclair's kind of got that mix of size and, you know, different profile. You can go up front. If Fleming's tired, you can kind of put her in that late box arriving number eight role, etc. As for Schmidt, though, as I said, if Canada continues to play the double pivot, I think it's becoming clear and clear every time that Schmidt plays, she suits that double pivot better than, you know, Grosso does. And that's not a knock on Grosso. That's just, you know, the kind of players, you know, the player that she is, the kind of player Schmidt is. So if Canada wants to keep rocking the double pivot, I think Schmidt has earned a start. And for me, I mean, I saw some concerns. Is she, you know, fit enough? She is very fit at her age. I mean, Sophie Schmidt did an Ironman last fall, by the way, if anyone wasn't aware of that, which is a very impressive feat for anyone, especially she did it like a few days after her club season was over as a kind of like a joke, like no training, and she completed it and did very well. So she is very fit and someone who, if she's willing, if Bev Priestman keeps running that double pivot, I have full confidence that Schmidt would fit nicely in there and could start against, say, an Australian in the rest of the tournament.
And from Natalie Houghton, what does Chloe Lacasse have to do to earn a start? Amazing league form, physical and gritty. Surely she has proved this by now with her off-bench performances. And another positive performance by her today. I think she is more effective than Adriana Leon down that side. Of course, Leon pops up with the goal, but it was Leon scoring just moments after I was having the thought of maybe Leon shouldn't be on the women's national team entirely because she doesn't play a club. She takes a while to become any sort of effective in games when she does get the chance with the national team. Not very effective in most of the game other than, of course, popping up for goals like she did against Brazil, like she has done in the past, like she did today. So, yeah, it's a confusing point. But Chloe Lacasse, I feel, is more effective as an all-around player in that position than Leon is.
Funny, she only pops up and scores goals, and that's kind of Canada's problem, isn't it? Slow starts, but then
she in the decisive moments,
win games. My God, they come up with a decisive moment, right? It's kind of hilarious how that sort of works out.
It's a silly thought, but that's what's kind of coming to mind.
Well, it makes sense, because it's like, again, it's something where you look in the overall part of it, right? Like, you kind of want, if your forwards aren't scoring, you kind of want them to do other stuff. But the thing is, she scores. So I think for Canada, the problem is they kind of have a few attackers like that. Not like Leon specifically in the effectiveness, but for whatever reason, for Canada, Jordan Hoytema has kind of been like that as well, in the sense that today was a good game and she kind of gets on the ball. But like you say, her and Leon, they kind of had this tendency of drifting out of games. And, you know, Evelyn Vian was another example. She kind of drifted out of games. And for Canada, you can't start all three at once now. It's kind of clear because you kind of need something from your forwards. And that's where I'd agree with Chloe Lacasse. Chloe Lacasse kind of always brings something. She's always willing to run, always willing to make something happen, for better or for worse. Sometimes it doesn't come off, but I think that's a great point about Leon, is that, yeah, she'll get you that decisive goal, but can you rely on her? Are you going to keep her on the field for 70 minutes in hope of that one moment of magic? Considering Canada's needs for goals, yes, but then at a certain point, you can't have too many of those players on the field, right? It's like the proverbial luxury player, so to speak, or it's something where you're going to need some forwards who can bring that spark, and Lacasse has brought that.
And with the win in Canada's back pocket, they'll look ahead to their final group stage match, and it's a tough one against Australia, who are likely to have Sam Kerr back for that match as well as just being in front of a massive crowd in Australia. They'll play for the top spot in Group B early Monday morning, 6 a.m. Eastern time. So the East Coast people get a chance at the early start like the West Coasters today, but 3 a.m. Pacific. So maybe the most awkward time of this World Cup, because it's a real question of, do you go to sleep early? Do you stay up? If you're staying up, you're probably staying up till 5:30 realistically. So certainly a bit of a confusing time. Australia faces Nigeria on Thursday morning in their second match, about 24 hours after we're recording right now. Guys, what time are you going to be waking up, or are you going to be staying up for the Canada-Australia match?
I'm on the East Coast, so I'm just going to wake up at 6 a.m., which is probably the easy choice. But honestly, if I was on the West Coast, I would go to sleep early, get like 4 or 5 hours, whatever I end up getting, wake up for the match, watch it, go back to sleep, catch up on the sleep, and then wake up again. Staying up, I've done that before. It's an absolutely futile effort every single time. You think you're gonna do it. You pound the coffee. You're good for like the first half, and then the second half comes, and you're like, oh god. And then you just fall asleep anyway, or you just stay wired until 5:30, 6:30 in the morning, and then your entire day is thrown off. So better to go to sleep early, and then wake up for the game, go back to bed for a few hours, and then at least that way you can salvage some of your day. That's personally what I'd do anyway.
Yeah, I always get the 3 hours minimum. Just get it. Like, it's, you kind of see it during the Olympics. You see it even during this World Cup. It's great to stay up, but you just, there's a wall that you hit around 2 or 3. And I saw it in the Nigeria, or no, it was the Australia Island game. That was a fight to get there at 3 a.m. I just did it because I was like, whatever, I'm up there. Canada's group opponents, let's watch. It's still early. No, it wasn't early. 3 is definitely one worth sleeping for if you can. If you have no reason to watch the midnight game, skip the midnight game. You can watch it on tape delay if need be, because it'll take a lot out of you.
And what do you guys expect from that Canada versus Australia game? If Canada has a slow start again, I think they're in a lot more of a tedious position than they would be against Ireland, especially if Sam Kerr is back in that Australia lineup. And do you see Sam Kerr starting with how her health is as well?
I potentially could, just because it's going to be a crucial game. And look, obviously we don't know what Australia's result's going to be against Nigeria, but it could be a case of she has to start anyway, because it's a must-win game to get out of the group, let alone win it. So we'll have to, I guess, wait and see for that. But, in terms of the potential slow start, it is worth noting that the only other time Canada has won after conceding first under Bev Priestman was against Australia. And it was Adriana Leon, actually, the hero that day as well. So, you know, I do think that at the very least, we know the team has the mental strength to overcome it, right? And they've done it before against Australia. Yes, it's going to be a partisan crowd, but it was pretty much a partisan crowd today with all the Irish expats living in Australia. So it was kind of good practice in that way. But no doubt about it, if there's ever a game where you want to start well and be able to give yourself a bit of an advantage, it's going to be in this one, because it's by far the best team in the group, certainly in terms of individual quality, where they can punish you. And it's the host team, so you know that there's going to be a lot of momentum behind with the crowd and whatnot. You got to find a way to quell that. So that's what's going to be super, super fascinating, because if there's ever time for them to figure it out, it's going to be on Monday.
Yeah, and I think Sam Kerr still starts regardless, just because either way, you're going to want to get her fit for the knockouts. But I think the risk will depend on if Australia wins, they're guaranteed to go through, if I'm not mistaken, at 6 points. No one will be able to catch them with the draws. So that will, you know, maybe she only goes 45 if they are, you know, if they're in a scenario like that. But then, of course, if they draw with Nigeria, all of a sudden the group gets wide open and anyone can win it between them, Nigeria and Canada. So I think Kerr starts, and yeah, for Canada against Australia, it's just manage the early part. Because I think, as we've seen throughout this, you know, through these two games, throughout Priestman's tenure, Canada's always a team that grows in the games. Heck, even at the Olympics, it feels like some of their best halves are always in the second halves of games in that knockout round, at least in the group stage. It was, funnily enough, the opposite. If I remember against Japan, they had a late goal they wanted back, and ditto against Great Britain, but that's way back in the timeline. But yeah, start well, because I think, you know, you're going to finish well. You can bring in some influence. Like, they've got options off the bench, right? Like, we completely, Deanne Rose and Nichelle Prince didn't see the field in this game. Maybe that will be a bit of rest that they need to, you know, be an influence off the bench in the next game. You know, between Schmidt, Grosso, Fleming, Quinn, one of them's likely not going to start, so that's a super sub you can bring in the games. Tune Vien, Hoitema, it seems one's not going to start. That's another influential name you can bring in a game. So you know the subs are going to come. You know you have options off the bench. So it's just, yeah, like Peter said, can you start well? Can you keep Kirk quiet? Can you even grab an early goal, right? Catch Australia by surprise, because say, especially if they're in a situation where their top spot or, you know, their spot in the knockout stages isn't assured, they could get nerves, right? The big crowd, the pressure being hosts and, you know, one of the favorites of the tournament doing well, that pressure could get to them. And look, I mean, the thing is with Australia, we didn't see much. We haven't seen their second game. They didn't look great in that first game. They looked very nervous. They had a, you know, very poor performance other than the fact that they got the winning penalty and got it over the line. So it's something where if Canada can put them under pressure and kind of test them about that, like, okay, was what you showed in that first game legit or just nerves? Canada could really get something early. So yeah, I think the real key is the first half. And heck, even if you make it to the first halftime 0-0, you're in a good position if you're Canada to continue to break away things away in the second half as you can, but you can't allow any early goals. And heck, go score an early goal too. It would be nice for them to get something like that for once.
And the question from Dan at @rocket_footy, again on Chloe Lacasse. She's looked so good in her two substitute appearances. Do you think she will start against Australia? In my opinion, we need her creativity on the ball, and she's a good replacement for an injured Becky.
I could see it in that scenario. I think it would be Lacasse and Leon as the wide forwards, and then I imagine Hoitema is the number nine, if that were to happen, but I don't know. I think if there was ever a chance where she could start, it would be this one, because when you look at who has logged the majority of the minutes up front, it has been Hoitema, it has been Leon. I know she's been substituted out of both games, but she started both games. Given her previous heroics against Australia and her experience, I'm sure she's going to start again. So I don't know if she'll get dropped. Hoitema, I reckon, would be the starting nine. After that, it's do you start Deanne Rose? Do you maybe end up moving Hoitema out to the wing, keeping VN up front? Do you start Christine Sinclair up front possibly, which I think would be quite something. And it also depends on her fitness too, because she did end up limping off the pitch at the end of the game today. So we'll have to see how she is fitness-wise. But I think if there was ever a chance for her to start it, it could be this one.
Yeah, Lacasse just has to start. She's been a spark. She's creating. She's going at it. And it's just in the first half, Canada's kind of lacked that. Like, heck, even in this first half of this game, Leon Hoitema had some great opportunities in the first half, but they, you know, they had a few times where the touch was heavy or the cross was a bit wayward. I would love to see what happens if Lacasse was in that scenario. Just run at things. Like, sometimes early in the game, you just need that energy, that disruption. And she's so good off the bench with that, of course, against tired legs, but you need that energy from the start. So I'd love to see a Lacasse start. And yeah, I like the idea of like a Lacasse, Leon, and Hoitema. You know, yeah, I'd like to see Vien get another start. But, you know, if Priestman prefers her off the bench, then I wouldn't hate giving that front three a go, because maybe, you know, between Leon and Hoitema, maybe Lacasse can be that kind of spark that those two need to kind of get going from the start of a game too as well.
And from WSoccer CA, did Sophie Schmidt do enough to start against Australia?
See, if Julia Grosso did not get subbed off at halftime, I'd say yes. But I think the substitutions that Priestman made in terms of bringing off Buchanan, we know that she was potentially dealing with something entering that game, so that probably came into it. The fact Grosso also came out, that probably helps their chances of then once again starting for the next game. So I'd say no, but if there was ever a time where you could see her coming in, it would be for Grosso as pretty much the only change in that midfield. You just go Quinn, Schmidt, Fleming as your trio and go from there. But I think Grosso ends up still starting.
I'd say Schmidt probably is. She's done enough to start. I think between our two cameos, and just, again, the double pivot question. So I think if Canada's going to keep rocking with that double pivot, I see a Schmidt start. It would have to be something where you get a tweak and, you know, maybe experiment against an Australia. But will Priestman experiment against a team like Australia in a must-win game? Hard to say. So I think because of that, the safe option would be going Schmidt and Quinn. And I think that might make sense, because if you're trying to replicate that Desiree Scott-Quinn double pivot that worked so well for Canada before, well, Schmidt is the best replacement for that. So I'd say she's done enough to start, and tactically it makes most sense for Canada to give that a go if they're going to keep rocking with this.
And when you are looking at potential starting 11s for that Australia match, when you look at Canada, what do you see? Of course, there's some worries once again with Kadisha Buchanan. She couldn't continue on for the entire 90 today, and Bev Priestman seemed like she was a little bit hesitant on whether to commit to Buchanan being available for that Australia match as well. Illness being the main issue there. But when you're looking at a potential starting 11 for Canada in this Australia match, I guess I'll go first and then I'll hand off to you guys. I would go with Caelan Sheridan in net, despite some of the concerns that have been around her. I just don't think throwing in Sabrina D'Angelo at this point is necessarily a strong idea. I'd go Alicia Chapman at left back. Just change things up if you're going to clearly need a bit more of that veteran presence in the lineup to sort of have level heads for Canada. I think Chapman does offer that over Riviere. Assuming Buchanan isn't ready to go, I'll go Zdorsky and Vanessa Gilles in the heart of defense, and Ashley Lawrence on the right. Hopefully she's okay after being in some discomfort today. I'll agree with Alex as well on the midfield double pivot, Quinn Schmidt, and then I'll have Fleming as the 10. And then the front three is where it gets a little bit interesting to me, because Evelyn Dien didn't exactly deliver as that number nine today. I like Chloe Lacasse. I like Jordan Heidema. But would you put Lacasse necessarily on the right and maybe put Adriana Leon on the left and Heidema up top just to get those players on? That's where it kind of gets a little bit of mixed up for me, because I don't see Evelyn Vienne getting another start for this team, at least in the next game.
I'd agree. Look, it obviously depends on how Priestman wants to set this up, because a draw could end up being enough for them to get out of the group. Obviously, they're probably going to want to go for the win, but maybe they think, you know what, this is going to be a tough test. Better to kind of go in with something that we know we can attain and then kind of go from there. But I'm just going with the presumption that they're going to try to go for the win here. I think the back four remains the same as Sheridan. I don't think we're going to see any changes there. The midfield, I think it's going to remain basically the same that we saw today as well. Same trio of Quinn, Rosso, and Fleming, with Schmidt sort of the wild card. And then the trio is going to be, I think, Lacasse, Leon, and Heidema. So you're only going to end up seeing probably one change in the end. But like, I do think that collectively that would be the best side to help you win, because you have the aerial threat in Heidema whenever you get in behind the fullback and can get those accurate crosses in, which we haven't really seen much of at the tournament. If you want to play it to feet and play in behind the defenders with this patient buildup, you can still do it that way. You've got dynamism out wide, whether it's through the fullbacks or the wide forwards. You've got the technique in the midfield. You've got the balance from Quinn, who's just been magnificent on both sides of the ball. So I think overall that would be the best lineup to throw out there, but certainly a couple questions, that's for sure.
Yeah, look, I think there's a few ways I'd look at this. I think if I'm looking at my projected, so based on what I think Priestman would do / based on what we know, I think it would be, you know, Sheridan, it would be Lawrence, Buchanan, Gilles, Riviere, it would be Schmidt and Quinn, it would be Fleming, and then it would be Lacasse, Leon, Heidema. So that's probably what I think Sinclair would do. Or not Sinclair, what Priestman would do. But then, of course, what I would want to see is probably something similar to Peter. Again, I will remain forever sold on the Quinn Fleming Grosso. But again, that's 6 2/8, not 2 6s and 1 8. So until, so will we see that? You never know. Because I'd love to see that with a Vient up top, Lacasse on one of the wings, Leon or Heidema on one of the wings. I feel like that would be really fun. But what also, you know, a bit of a fun formation. I don't think we'll see it, but just throwing some fun ideas out there. I'd love to see a 4-2-2-2. Yes, a bit of an unconventional formation, but sign me up with that back four, a double pivot of Schmidt, Quinn, double tens of Grosso, Fleming, and then a front two of either Heidema and Vienne paired with Lacasse. Tell me that wouldn't be very fun. And something I'd love to see them try out, but that's just me throwing, like, if this is if I got given the coaching reins for a day and I got to kind of do my thing. So maybe that's a projected 11 that if I see it on Monday by some miracle, I'd be very pleased, and hopefully I'd love to hope it would work.
And score predictions for the Canada Australia game, I'm going to go with 1-1 in this one. Australia end up topping the group, because I think they'll get something off of Nigeria as well, and I think it's probably a win off of Nigeria. And then I have Canada going through as second in the group, and then you're looking at that well-rumored game of Canada-England in the round of 16.
I think this is nil-nil written all over it. Kind of hoping for a reverse jinx and that we get some sort of excitement, hopefully the positive excitement, not the nervous excitement. But I do think that Canada is going to go out there, shut things down defensively as they usually do. They're probably going to get a couple of chances, fail to put them away. They come out of there with a nil-nil draw. They finish second. They go into likely that game against England and they focus from there.
Yeah, I'd say probably 0-0, 1-1. I'm kind of in between those two results. I think each took those. I mean, again, I'm feeling it's kind of a final game draw, two good teams, kind of what Canada does, and that'll benefit them in the knockout rounds, those sorts of scores. But they'll have to hope that, yeah, based on the Australia result. What's wild is that there's a scenario where if Australia draws Nigeria 0-0 and then Canada could actually top the group with the draw. So maybe if you're Canada, you hope for a scenario like that. I see a draw, and will that be enough to get them out the group? Will that be enough to finish second or finish first? Who knows? That's the beauty of this group stage.
And our last question from David Anthony A_Miller16: can the men's team wear the women's kits? The girls are wearing some nice looking ones out there, and I certainly love the women's kits for this World Cup. I bought one myself just hours after they launched. I was immediately in love with these kits. I'd love to see the men's team wear them, but I would also like to see a unique look for the men's team and not necessarily steal the thunder of the women's team.
Either way, I'd love to see a kit like that. They nailed this one with the women. The men's have always been pretty underwhelming for the last few years, and I think we know the reasons why that is.
Yeah, look, just get some good kits for both teams. Pretend unique for both of them, nice for both of them. And one thing's for sure, they will sell. So sell them as well, and then maybe you could get a couple cents on the side to help out with matters around. So that's one thing for sure, is that people want to get their hands on nice kits. And the fact that these women's ones are so nice, you can see the interest just online. And I mean, they're beauties, and, you know, good to see Canada at least showing up on the world stage, fit to dress for the occasion. Now, hopefully they can take those kits a little further than the knockout rounds, and maybe even a little deeper into the knockout rounds. But that's a whole other equation.
Well, I just hope they do that mainly wearing their nice red kits, because the white ones don't look great, even though they did find a win in them today. But that's all we've got for episode 133 of the Northern Football Podcast. For Peter Galindo and Alex Gongi-Ruzic, I've been Ben Steiner. Make sure to tune in to our post-match show after Canada versus Australia to end Group E action. That match kicking off at 3 a.m. Pacific, 6 a.m. Eastern on Monday, July 31. That's all, folks. Thanks for listening.